Hey, this is Ari Witten, and today we'll be mapping hormesis on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with Ari Witten. Ari is a number one best-selling author and the creator of the Energy Blueprint System. He's an energy and fatigue specialist who focuses on taking an evidence-based approach to energy enhancement. For the last several years, he's been working with the world's top fatigue researchers to develop the most comprehensive program in the world on the science of overcoming fatigue and increasing energy. This is the Energy Blueprint, and today we'll be discussing the concept of hormesis. Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix, Ari.
Thank you very much, Andrea. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to talk about this topic. It's not a common one, and I'm wondering if you could start us off by defining hormesis for us.
Yes, absolutely. So this is the concept of a metabolic stressor that ultimately becomes something that's positive for your body. And this sounds like kind of a bizarre idea because most of us are so used to hearing this word stress, and we immediately have all kinds of negative associations with it. And the idea that a stress could possibly be something that's good for us is kind of a wacky idea that doesn't really fit within most popular health paradigms right now. So basically, the idea is that by subjecting your body to a transient metabolic stressor, which genuinely is kind of negative in that particular moment, but when it's of the right dose, which means the intensity as well as the duration of it, it stimulates certain adaptive mechanisms in our body that ultimately, when they are stimulated in the right way, they make adaptations to the body that ultimately make it more resistant to various other kinds of stressors, as well as increase resistance to numerous different kinds of diseases. And it's even associated with increased longevity. And of course, I should not forget to mention my area of specialty, which is energy. It also tends to promote adaptations that make the cells better at producing energy, which ultimately means more energy for you. So this, again, still might seem like kind of a weird abstract idea to people, like, what is this guy talking about, this metabolic stressor? Well, everybody actually is already familiar with this in a way. The most common thing that people are used to hearing about that is a hormetic stressor, and most people just don't realize it, is actually physical exercise. Working out, going to the gym or going for a jog or lifting weights or whatever it is that you do, interval training, anything like that, that is actually a metabolic stressor. And it is genuinely something that could be harmful to your body when it's not done in the appropriate dose. So if you, for example, run a marathon every day, 7 days a week for a couple weeks, you'll find out pretty fast that exercise is actually something that's harmful. You'll probably either have a heart attack or your body just will be horribly inflamed and painful. So what's going on there? Well, what's going on is that this metabolic stress of doing this workout is actually stimulating all kinds of adaptive mechanisms in the body that ultimately, as I said, enhance resilience, resistance to disease, energy production, and longevity and so on. And that's why we have this weird situation where this metabolic stressor of exercise is associated with this mountain of evidence that we have showing that it benefits this disease and that disease and neurological disease and heart disease and all of these weird benefits that come from doing something that is actually a stressor.
There's a few things that are like popping into my mind as you're talking about this. And I think as clinicians, one of the hormetic responses in the body that we can also relate to, in addition to the brilliant one you pointed out with exercises in the immune system, in terms of what we might consider the adverse effects of the hygiene hypothesis. So little bits of exposure to antigens actually give us the ability to adapt and be resilient to external, otherwise toxic stressors. And so it's kind of that, am I getting that right? That that's that same principle that you're talking about? Yeah. So that might be one that we can relate to. I'm also thinking about Kelly McGonigal's research and her TED Talk, How to Make Stress Your Friend, which I'll link in the show notes in addition to links to some of your articles, Ari. But yeah, it's this interesting principle where we're actually generating resiliency. And if we go to the skills portion of the matrix, the right-hand side, and we look at that stress and resilience area, it's funny. I always think that resilience is one of the ones that like gets gold stars for me that we overlook so much. We focus on stress and stress reduction, but we forget about the fact that we have to build and generate resiliency. And I love how you talk about resiliency in your work in relation to energy and fatigue. So I definitely want to talk about that and move into the soup of the matrix, but also mitochondrial function. So can we talk about hormesis in relation to those physiological underpinnings?
Yes, absolutely. And actually, hormesis really centers around the mitochondria. And in fact, a lot of the research that you read, if you look this concept up, is actually called mitohormesis, all one word, and it's mitochondrial hormesis. So mitochondria is a very big topic. There's a whole bunch of stuff here related to longevity. This is also related to chronic fatigue. There's a lot of different lines of research looking at mitochondria in the context of aging, in the context of various specific diseases of chronic fatigue, neurological diseases, on and on and on. It's linked with a whole bunch of stuff. The point here, to summarize many hundreds of papers very quickly, is that mitochondria are a really, really big deal. And the health of your mitochondria and also the size of your mitochondria and the number of your mitochondria all impact on your risk for various diseases, as well as the rate of aging itself and your longevity, as well as, of course, energy levels. I mean, mitochondria are the energy generators in our cells. So it kind of goes without saying that if you have smaller, weaker energy generators in your cells and less of them, you're probably going to have more fatigue. And vice versa, and in addition to all of that, they also have a big impact on resilience. And what you said before is exactly right, that most people really leave out the whole resilience element of their health paradigms and everything that they're teaching. And resilience, I should be clear, is not just the result of avoiding stress. It is not, you don't just lay in bed all day and watch TV and then you become a really resilient person.
Right.
Resilience is built through exposure to stressors, through exposure to hormetic stressors, while also, of course, eliminating the chronic pathological stress. But you need both elements. You have to eliminate the chronic stressors while adding in the short dose hormetic stressors. And, you know, to be clear, this is not just about exercise. There are many, many other types of hormetic stressors. Temperature stress is a big one. So heat exposure, cold exposure, hypoxia, going without oxygen, that can be in the context of certain types of exercise or breath holding practices, or, you know, if in a natural environment, you know, for example, going underwater and holding your breath and skin diving and spear fishing and things of that nature, as well as sun exposure. UV exposure is another one. Even red and near infrared light exposure is another one. As well as going without food for a period of time. So intermittent fasting mm-hmm. is another type of hormetic stress. And then also many different types of phytochemicals. And this is a big topic that I love talking about, but we probably don't have time for. But many types of phytochemicals that are commonly thought of as antioxidants, quote unquote, are actually not antioxidants. They're actually pro-oxidants that work very much like exercise does at the cellular level. In that they create a low-level stress, metabolic stress, from pro-oxidation, and that stimulates your cells to produce their own antioxidant defense mechanisms. Oh, so they end up having antioxidant effects on the body, but they don't act just as antioxidants, as most people think. They actually act as hormetic stressors. So, you know, things like adaptogens that right. people are associate with the adrenals primarily, actually, in my opinion, much more likely their main mechanism of action is not their effect on cortisol, but much more likely it's their effect on mitohormesis and building up resilience at the mitochondrial level. So all of these hormetic stressors ultimately help stimulate your mitochondria through this low-level stress to stimulate them to grow bigger and stronger, to actually stimulate what's called mitochondrial biogenesis, which means the creation of new mitochondria, so you get more of them. And at the same time, they help build something called the ARE, the antioxidant response element, which is this internal antioxidant and anti-inflammatory defense system. And that system, you know, as much as we talk of people talk of take this antioxidant nutrient or this anti-inflammatory nutrient, where it's really at is building up the internal antioxidant and anti-inflammatory defense systems.
So I'm thinking about the story section of the matrix, that left-hand side in relation to resilience. And I'm always saying that part of the bioindividuality that we have to work with people is understanding that two different people will be impacted by the same quote unquote insult, whether it's a life insult, a trauma, an exposure to an infection differently. When we think about resilience, are there factors that could be genetics or triggers that we commonly see or certain mediators that are impairing our resiliency?
Yes, absolutely. And this is a very individual thing. As far as someone's baseline level of resilience, yeah, there's lots of different factors here. So kind of a very brief overview would be, of course, there are potential genetic conditions that affect mitochondria, but they tend to be very rare. So I'll kind of leave those out of the discussion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things like childhood trauma, adverse childhood events or ACEs, right. Those types of things, there is actually some links between that and mitochondrial function. And I mean, when I say that there's some links, that means there's actually some existing research that has explored some of those links. But certainly it's reasonable to speculate that people with emotional trauma from a very young age have impacts on their brain function that ultimately impact mitochondrial health and resilience at both mitochondrial and neurological levels. I mean, somebody who has trauma in their background is just, they're going to be less tolerant of stressors, and they're going right. to have a different baseline level of stress tolerance. Of course, if you're exposed to various kinds of toxins, whether as a child or an adult, if you have heavy metal poisoning, these things are directly toxic to mitochondria. So they're going to hinder mitochondrial health and the ability of them to have a sort of extra capacity to adapt to stressors. One other thing that I'll mention here is sleep disorders.
Yes.
So sleep apnea, for example. Happens to be very common in people with chronic fatigue syndrome. Sleep disorders or disrupted sleep, or even just circadian rhythm disruption, just from having poor circadian rhythm related habits and poor sleep hygiene habits. If you chronically, for example, have blue light exposure in the evenings before bed, well, one of the things that's doing is suppressing melatonin production in the brain. And most people are familiar with that general idea and the idea of melatonin as kind of this hormone that triggers sleep. Well, most people don't know that melatonin is also extraordinarily important in protecting mitochondria. It actually is one of the very few antioxidants that embeds itself in the mitochondrial membranes and protects mitochondria from damage and stabilizes them against various kinds of insults. So what then happens if you have somebody who for years or for decades is looking at electronics for 3 hours before bed, you know, and chronically suppressing levels of melatonin production?
Right.
Well, now you're, you know, if you do that every day for years or decades, that lower level of melatonin means less melatonin stabilizing mitochondria and protecting mitochondria and repairing mitochondria each night while you sleep. Well, ultimately that adds up and makes your mitochondria much more susceptible to damage, meaning it lowers what I call the resilience threshold, which is basically this kind of the mitochondria's ability to tolerate and adapt to stress. And if you start to exceed that resilience threshold, now it just, there's no adaptation taking place. It just becomes a pathological stressor that results in symptoms. And so when you, for example, have poor sleep and circadian rhythm habits, you're now lowering your resilience threshold and making it much more easy for various kinds of stressors, whether they be toxins or psychological stress or working out or whatever kind of stress, to overwhelm the mitochondria's capacity to adapt and then to result in various kinds of symptoms.
You know, what I really appreciate that you're speaking into, Ari, and speaking into so beautifully, like you're talking the matrix here, is that we're talking about issues of energy and fatigue, which are your specialty, in and also longevity in relation to mitochondrial damage and what happens with these minute exposures that can impact the mitochondrial production positively or negatively. And yet so much of what you gave us comes back to what we would do in diet and lifestyle modification. So instead of just targeting the mitochondria themselves, we're actually using diet and lifestyle modification to impact the mitochondrial function. So if we could just run quickly down that right side, that skills section of the matrix, there's a number of things you talked about. Sleep for sure, with sleep disturbances. Also, you talked about exercise and movement. You talked about nutrition. I'm sure hydration plays a role. You talked about nutrition with what we take in, but also intermittent fasting. With that as a springboard, anything else in that right side of the matrix that we'd be working with clients and patients to alter in their diet and lifestyle modification that ultimately impacts mitochondrial function?
Oh yeah, there's so much. And I just want to add one quick thing here, which is to build on that point that you just mentioned, that kind of I'm taking things back to the lifestyle factors. I think that's hugely important. And I think that a lot of people miss that. They Yes. reduce things down to a particular Totally. Physiological mechanism. And then Yes. they think it's about addressing that mechanism, whether via a supplement or a drug, or depending on whether you're seeing an alternative or a conventional practitioner. And I really can't stand that.
I both.
Yeah. I mean, we need to not confuse physiological mechanisms with
intervention.
With the ultimate causes of those things and where the best place is to intervene. It's all about figuring out what are the underlying causes and going to that. And that's almost always nutrition and lifestyle factors.
Bravo.
So with that in mind, yeah, there's so much here. We touched on circadian rhythm briefly. With regard to nutrition, one thing I'll mention here is it's not just about eating well. It's not just about putting the right foods and the right nutrients, the right vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients and fiber and the magical carb to fat ratio and the right amount of protein and all this kind of stuff and these anti-inflammatory foods. It's not just about that. Of course, that stuff is important. But it's actually, when it comes to mitochondria, part of this is that actually eating too much is directly toxic to mitochondria. So when you're chronically overeating, you're actually poisoning your mitochondria. And this is, without getting too detailed here, ultimately food ends up being sort of turned into electrons at the mitochondrial level. Well, if you have too much chronically coming in, it sort of backs up the flow of electrons, and ultimately some of those get thrown off and basically become free radicals and damage things inside of the mitochondria, damage membranes, damage mitochondrial DNA. And that can literally be caused by just consuming too much food too often. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, is to be mindful of not overeating. Of course, chronically undereating can also result in fatigue just from malnutrition and not getting in enough calories.
Right.
But much more commonly is people damaging their mitochondrial health through overeating. Mm-hmm. So fasting is a type of hormetic stress that can help stimulate mitochondrial health. But we need to look at fasting, in my opinion, in the right context, which is, this is actually something we are designed to do some of the time. Mm-hmm. We're not designed to be pouring in food into our bodies every 2 hours for 14 or 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the time, regardless of what level of physical activity we're doing. So having breaks in food intake, being mindful of not overeating, very, very important for mitochondrial health. Also, timing or pairing your food intake with your physical activity is another big factor here. If we look to nature, and if you just simply observe any animal, whether it be a bird or a squirrel or a rabbit or a deer or fish, or whatever it is, just look to nature and just pay attention. What you'll notice is all animal species move. They all move pretty much constantly, and they have to acquire food. There has to be this movement to acquire food. but humans, modern humans, we've lost that ability. Yeah. We've lost that environmental demand on us, that kind of thing that's imposing on us to move to acquire food. We don't have to hunt. We don't have to gather food anymore. We can sit on our butts and have food served to us all day long. And that mismatch between physical expenditure and movement and energy intake it is something that also can create that toxic effect on the mitochondria. So one other thing that I'll mention that I really love is saunas. I think saunas are incredibly powerful medicine. I think that the research on them to combat inflammation, to combat various diseases, there's some amazing epidemiological studies that have showed just massive reductions in cardiovascular disease, as well as neurological diseases, as well as even all-cause mortality, that are directly correlate with the frequency and duration of use of saunas. And that I tell people that if there were a drug that were associated with benefits like that, like if there were a pharmaceutical that they found associations with, you know, various diseases and all-cause mortality, like what has been shown with saunas, it would be a massive blockbuster drug, you know, the biggest selling, most amazing miracle drug the world has ever seen. And everybody would be told, you have to get on this drug. It's absolutely incredible. You're an idiot if you don't take this drug, because it's just so amazing what it does for disease prevention and longevity. And what most people don't realize is, like, we have that drug. It's just not a pill. It's a sauna.
Right. I love that. I'm going to go sit in my sauna today. I am inspired. Well, thank you so much, Ari. That was chock full of information, really understanding hormesis in relation to mitochondrial function and the downstream impact that it has on energy and fatigue. So much we can do to back it up. I really appreciate your time and wisdom.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more amazing episodes at 15minutematrix.com, and we can always notify you each time there is a new podcast episode. You can go to 15minutematrix.com/notify, and we will be sure to drop into your inbox with a short reminder that a new episode is ready for you once you let us know you'd like to receive that. You also have an open invitation to email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. And you can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.